graphic and disturbing subject matter. This is a horror true crime comedy podcast, and the topics may depict murder, abuse, the supernatural, strange moments in history, and things that should never be done with food. All jokes are made with the utmost respect to those involved, and listener discretion is advised. If you enjoy listening to disturbing interests, then we ask that you please rate us on whatever podcast platform you choose to listen on. And remember to tell a friend, because with us, you might be disturbed, but you aren't alone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Disturbing Interest. I am Regina King, your evil queen, and sitting next to me is my ever-lovely partner.
Hello, my name is Lynn, the docent of darkness.
I've got a voice again.
Yes, no coughing, no hacking, no wheezing.
I'm so excited. I mean, there's still a minor cough, but I'm so excited. I'm so much better.
You're like, not sick for once, yay!
Not dead. I mean, that's a plus, right?
Maybe, like, wear one of those, like, you know, decontamination suits for, like, entering the world for a while, just so that nobody, like, on you, and then, bam, you're right back at it.
A bubble?
A bubble, yeah.
I could have a hamster ball.
Yes.
When you all see me running down the street in a hamster ball, you'll know.
You're like the boy in the bubble.
Yes. You'll be like, hey, I think that might be an evil queen over there in a bubble. I'll be a bubble of queen.
Please promise me you're going to wear like a giant hamster onesie while you do it.
Fuck yes, I will. That's the only way to do that, is a big hamster kigurumi and a ball.
Yeah, just embody it.
Yes.
Go all out for it. All in.
Hello, Neko.
So, our shitty sound tech is around here someplace. Lord only knows where.
And the dog, the canine intern, is just sitting here in the podfist, staring up again like we've put his ball up, which you normally do before we record, so that he can't make squeaky noises, but the ball isn't there. So I think you've trained him to just come in here and stare upwards longingly while we work.
I've given the dog a complex.
Yep, you have. You've broken the dog.
Oh, I have broken my dog, ladies and gentlemen. I have broken my dog. Well, today, on our lovely episode, first, how you doing?
I'm here. I'm alive. I'm present, you know, and accounted for.
Nice. I have a story for you about something I did last night.
Okay. Is it a story of mayhem and mystery?
Well, first, I do have to say to all of you hearing the background noise, that is Mr. Meow doing everything in the background right now. I'm sorry. This is artisanal podcasting right here. So, it's kind of a story of mayhem. It would have been mayhem had I bought something different.
Was it mayhem adjacent?
Yes. Much like the rest of my life, it was mayhem adjacent. So, I guess last night, I decided to sleep shop.
You can do when you get the ambient walrus situation, but this was au naturel.
Well, so I've told you I sleep eat, right?
No, you sleep eat.
I sleep eat. So this is fucked up. I mean, I'm a girl who could lose a few pounds, and when I'm on a diet, not even just when I'm on a diet, like I will go in and even with my mouthpiece in, I have woken up like choking on cheese, and I do mean like a mouth. Full of cheese. Just wake up. Cheese.
That would be the most ignominious way to die.
I know, right?
Choked to death on a hunk of I just picture like a handful of like shredded like for tacos cheese that you've just stuffed in your mouth like again like a giant gerbil. Wow, that's
I'm living that gerbil life.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so block of cheese, slices of cheese, shredded cheese, not even just cheese. And not only do I just eat it, but I take whatever wrapping it is in when I am done and just throw it either over my shoulder or drop it. And so Mr. Meow will know when I have done this because he'll come in the next day and find just a mess in the kitchen.
Like a trail of cheese crumbs and a bag of wrappers? Cheese spore?
Yeah, it's terrible. I've gone in there apparently and eaten his leftovers and just taken the carton and thrown it over my shoulder.
It's freaking hilarious.
We have third-party confirmation. Repeat, third-party confirmation that this is true.
Yeah, yeah. So, I'm known for sleep eating. It's a running joke, not only in our house, but amongst our friends who know me well, because I just... Who does this?
Maybe you have, like, Prader-Willi syndrome, but only when you're sleeping.
I'll go with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's nocturnal Prader-Willi syndrome.
Anything that will...
You're like a cheese werewolf. Like, cheese turns you feral in the night. A cheese wolf.
A cheese wolf. Would that make me a mouse? I
just turn into a giant were-mouse in the middle of the night.
Yes. So... Aside from the sleep eating, apparently now I'm sleep shopping.
And you're not, like, on Ambien or any of these things that like, they warn you.
No.
Okay.
This is just who I am. This level of crazy is just who I am.
So what did you end up buying?
Well, I left my straightener in San Francisco when I went for work. And so I've been shopping while awake, like, you know, trying to figure out a new straightener. And I wanted to and for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, it's a hair straightener. I wanted to get a ceramic comb straightener because I've been wanting to try them. It was time to get a new straightener anyway. Cool. I picked several out that I was debating between. Well, apparently last night I made a choice.
Wow, so, like, you're very decisive and cheese-based when you sleep.
Yes, yes, I'm very thorough and all about the cheese.
So, here's what I don't understand. Why can't your brain do really useful things that suck? Like, you could do, like, your taxes in your sleep, or you could be, like, a sleep bill payer or a sleep vacuumer.
Because I do that when I'm awake?
Yeah, so maybe you should... There you go. Stop doing useful adult stuff during the day and just hope that your sleeping brain will, like, take up the slack. Man, I want to be useful like this in my sleep. All I do is, like, snore and wake up thinking about Tom Hiddleston. It's weird.
I love me some Hiddles. You know I love me some Hiddles. Anyway, so, yeah, that is my story about shopping in my sleep.
Yeah, most of my excitement was, you know, joining the rest of the media sheeple and binging on the final Avengers movie, and of course on the Battle of Winterfell on Game of Thrones.
Oh, you know, I was right there with you. I oh my god. Oh my god.
All your faves are gonna die. Oh, surprisingly, not so many.
I'm just not gonna say anything other than I cried. I cried at Avengers. I cried like a little bitch.
Well, vis-a-vis Game of Thrones, I should have been scared, except I could not see shit.
Right?
I realized they were going for realism, but for fuck's sake, there are dragons! I think that particular ship of realism has long since sailed, for Christ's sake. Would it kill you to just, I don't know, spotlight some shit?
I had to, well, Mr. Meow had to figure out how to crank up the brightness on our television just so we could make out what the fuck was going on.
I just had to read recaps afterwards because I had no idea what the fuck was even happening. So, hey, thanks for the realism there, you know, lighting crew. That was great.
Awesome. Well done.
Yeah, and yeah, I did enjoy it. It was a solid, satisfying ending to the Avengers giant, not trilogy, quadrilogy? 14, 37 movies? I don't know. Empire? Whatever it was. Yeah.
Empire o film.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm still looking forward to seeing what Chris Evans, best of his name, king of all the Chrises, does next. Because I think he's actually Captain America, like, for real, in real life. And he gives hope with his brief but beautiful romance with Jenny Slate to frizzy-haired, strangely squeaky-voiced little Jew girls like myself everywhere.
I know that you are an Evans diehard, but for me, it's all about some Hemsworth. My God, this dog is obsessed.
Now, I do enjoy the Chris... Is it Chris Hemsworth? Oh, God, there's 800 Hemsworths. The one that's Thor. Chris Hemsworth.
Yes.
Okay, the other one is what? Married to Miley or something? Or is that a different... Australian.
Oh, the fuck if I know.
I don't know. Anyway, I like this one. I enjoy him as an actor. I don't just look at him and think, you have my sword and my bow and my axe. But I enjoy him. I think I know there are assholes from Australia, just like I know Canadians can be dicks, But I choose not to believe. I want to believe that all Australians are just kind of solid, fun, good time, joyful Kylie Minogues, you know?
You know, one of these days I'm going to do a story, a specific story on a happening in Canada, and it is going to break your fucking heart. It's the only reason I haven't done it yet.
Oh, I know Canadians are dickholes.
Okay.
Does it involve pigs?
No.
Okay, because, like, honest to God, if I just say the words Penticton and bacon, people are like, ugh! And you know that, like, that Canada is capable of some truly horrific cruelty. And I mean, just look at all the missing and murdered First Nations women and just know that, like, Canada is not always the land of milk and honey.
That is actually what it would be on.
Yeah, or of, you know, I don't know, Double Doubles and Timbits. Like, Canada can be givener in when it comes to bad stuff, too, hey? Can be, hey?
That's right.
So, not Canada today, but another glorious member of the Commonwealth. In fact, the opening member of the Commonwealth, Britain herself, will be the topic of conversation for this particular episode of Disturbing Interests.
It will, and I really hope we don't lose all of our British followers with this one, because, guys, we love how much love you're giving us. Obviously, you are spreading the news of our existence. Thank you so much. We love you. We love England on the whole. But just don't hold this episode against us. We're going to mispronounce things. We're probably going to get some things screwed up. Feel free to write us. That's what we're here for, especially if you have pictures of wizard bands.
I mean, I'm awesome at, like, just mangling history in America, so I'm very excited to mangle some of British royal history because there's just so goddamn much of it. We've got, like, what, 200-300 years of, like, America? They've got, like, forever! So this is pretty exciting.
I just love that the majority of the countries in the world can't. No, don't love on the microphone. What the hell? Come on, man. I just love that the majority of the countries celebrate a day that is of independence from England, and yet England celebrates a day where they had a failed attempt of a plot against their own government. I mean, that right there just kind of sums it up, doesn't it?
Well, okay, so, you know, I went through Western Civ, so I have a smattering of knowledge of the events of history. And let me just, can I make just a brief suggestion to, like, England and the royal family and all that stuff? Like, your numbering system is super whack when it comes to your royals. You give them numbers, right? But, like, not in order, because you could have, like, Edward IV, but then you get Richard III, but then you get Henry VIII, and then you get Elizabeth I. Like, can't you just, like, number each one of them? Like, you know, I know it's by name, but, like, I'm just saying it would be so much more efficient if you just started at one from, like, I don't know, Canute or William Canute. The Conqueror or whatnot, and then just, like, worked your way up to, like, I don't know, like, 30 or whatever, like, Liz is right now. Like, it's just a suggestion.
Whatever you want to do, just make it so we can understand who the fuck it is at what time. Because at the moment, it's hopping all around, and we actually have to pay attention. And if you haven't picked it up yet, Americans are not good at paying attention.
I just gave everybody nicknames so I could tell them apart. Again, I apologize in advance, historians of England, for doing that, but I'm not real smart, and I had to do that. I got Billy the Conk. Nice. I got Hanky Panky. Tricky Dicky 3.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love it. All right.
Well, Ricky 2, Electric Boogaloo, like, they all got nicknames.
Okay, why don't you get us kicked off? Just because I want to hear about Ricky 2, Electric Boogaloo, and because I am sitting here fighting our shitty sound tech not to love against the microphone.
Okay, so today on our Armchair Travel Podcast with Rick Steves of the World's Most Horrible Places, we are going to hop across the pond, as they say, to the Tower of London, which is, as you may have determined from the name of the place, a big-ass tower in the middle of the city of London.
No!
Well, okay, to be more exact and less of a smartass, I would actually classify this whole tower thing as more of like a big square castle.
A fort,
if you will, with like four turrets on each corner. surrounded by further fortifications that are also just, like, bristling with turrets. They loved a good turret back
in
the day.
Who doesn't?
I mean, I have wanted to add a turret to my house since, like, ever. And then those turrets are further surrounded by a large stone wall. And then all of this is set on a super cool, big, fancy green meadow called Tower Hill that is right near the north bank of the River Thames. Looks like Thames, pronounced Thames. So, you know, big ancient stone castles are really rad and all that, and, you know, the UK is pretty much encrusted with them. So why are we concentrating on this particular castle as being interestingly disturbing? Well, this castle has quite the reputation for being a place of super grisly historical murder.
Also known as the Bloody Tower.
So the Bloody Tower is even like a subset of the Tower of London.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, yeah, like all these different turrets and shit, they all have like names.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and yes. The Bloody Tower is a very specific one in which much murder, or not even murder, but
blood? Much blood happened.
Well, much imprisonment transpired.
I mean, it could be imprisonment and blood. I mean, who's to say?
Yeah, it could,
leeches,
you know.
That's where they keep the leeches.
So, does this Tower of London, this Bloody Tower, indeed deserve its gory reputation? Well, let's discuss, and you, my fellow listeners, can determine for yourself if it does. So first, a wee bit of background history on just how and why this tower came to exist in the first place, and what it was used for over the years. So, this castle is basically one of the OGs of fancy royal palaces of the UK. It is a Norman castle, which means it's not, its name is not Norman. It's Norman, but not Norman.
Can we call it Norm for short?
It means that it was one of the places that William the Conqueror, who came over from Normandy, which is in France, around the year of our Lord 1066, he came over and he beat the holy living snot out of the Anglo-Saxons, who were the people ruling Britain at that time. Well, not anymore, says Willy the Conk. So what do we say to the Anglo-Saxons? Not today! So William, or again, Billy the Conk, if you prefer, to his friends, after kicking a shit ton of Saxon ass, then began a castle-building offensive across England to basically solidify his rule by making lots of fortified palaces for his loyal royal homies to live in. So he could basically keep his peeps safe and intimidate the general populace with the magnificence of his big-ass stone towers.
Makes perfect sense.
Right? So, as London was the big main city of England, he wanted to make sure that there was an appropriately impressive big-ass stone building from which to look down on his conquered minions. And just remind them of just how damn fabulous these whole normies are, right? So, thus was the main center building of the big-ass Tower of London complex, known as the White Tower, constructed. So, the White Tower is most correctly termed, and here's, we're going to learn vocabulary, kids.
Oh, hey.
A keep or a donjon.
A donjon?
Donjon, which later became dungeon.
Oh!
And, which doesn't, I don't think that word means what we all think it means, so I'll get into that. So this donjon was a big building that was designed to be strong as hell and protect its inhabitants while also keeping them pretty comfortable, and because those inhabitants were typically the royals or the ruling family or people that were kind of keeping it for them in their stead. And it also became really good at keeping people trapped inside of it. Which
so,
is,
it was a place for those with money, those who wanted to take their money, and those who no longer had money.
Yes, yeah. So, it's just a highly fortified place, which is a good place to stay safe, and a good place to kind of keep people on ice, as needed. So, this is how dungeon, over the years, kind of came to mean what it does to us.
Huh. So, dungeon was donjon.
It started with the donjon, which is, I guess, a French word.
Donjon.
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 Donjon son.
I am just now, for forever, whenever I have the opportunity to say dungeon, going to be like, donjon!
Donjon!
Yes.
Grey Poupon in the donjon!
Yes, yes, so, all of that.
But yeah, so this place was not built as a prison. It was built as a fortified place for royal people to live, and it just slowly became, over the years, a pretty great place to keep royal people that you didn't really like anymore kind of trapped and on ice. And the Tower of London became primarily famous for its role as a dungeon for some pretty famous political prisoners. It has also been, in addition to that, at various times in its history, the home of the Royal Mint, not a super fancy jewel-encrusted Altoid, but like the place where they make all the money, a menagerie, which is a deeply horrible old-timey zoo that I will tell you a little bit more about that later in our follow-up episode to this, because that'll be the animals episode of the Tower of London.
Yeah.
And then it was also the home of the crown jewels of the United Kingdom, which it stays to this day as being. And it's a super fancy medieval safety deposit box for the royal family. And one of the biggest tourist attractions in London.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And it has been since before it was even a tourist attraction.
Oh, yeah. No, people love to come and kind of hang out and check it out because it's basically a giant, big-ass castle in the middle of this giant city. So why not wander around, right? Mm-hmm. But back to the whole famous political prisoner use for the Tower of London. Anyone who was anyone back in, say, the 16th century or so, probably spent some quality time in lockup there. And famously, some of those folks even lost their heads on the Tower Green. Here, like the absolute worst BuzzFeed listicle, is a short roster of famous historical people who enjoyed the Tower's hospitality. Let's start with William Wallace, or for those who did not pay attention in Western Civ class in school, real Mel Gibson from Braveheart. You know, the Scottish dude who was all, "They come and take our freedom!" And, well, yeah, he was briefly held at the Tower before he was then marched to an off-site hanging elm, and wherein he was hung and drawn and quartered, which basically means that this poor dude was strangled, but not to death. Yep. That would be too kind.
Yep.
Then emasculated, eviscerated, and his bowels were burned before him. He was then beheaded and cut into four separate but equal parts. And then his little old noggin, which was then dipped in tar to preserve it, was stuck on a big-ass stick atop London Bridge. Isn't history fun?
Didn't they send his body parts that had been cut up to different corners of the kingdom as well as a warning to other traitors?
I didn't look into that, but that seems like a thing that they might do. Yeah?
Yeah. I think so. I'm going with it, whether it's true or not. If it's not true, somebody write in and tell me, disturbinginterest@gmail.com. Also send me a picture of a wizard van.
Yeah, and you wonder why Scots are some real salty haggises to this day about the English. Yep. So King Henry VI was imprisoned there during some of the interminable Royal War of the Roses bullshittery, wherein the Houses of York and the Houses of Lancaster were constantly trying to undermine each other for control of the fucking Iron Throne or whatnot, like some horrible medieval version of Mean Girls. On Wednesdays, we wear yellow hose cross-gartered. Stop trying to make forsooth happen. You know, shit like that.
Yeah.
But instead of becoming a social outcast not getting asked to prom, old Henry VI went mad from melancholy. That's right, mad from melancholy. Melancholy.
Same.
And died tragically in the Tower from being real sad.
Not same.
Yeah, he died from sad. Or, more likely, his successor, Edward IV, had him murdered. Evidence found later when this king's body was exhumed suggests that, well, his head had a lot of injury to it, which kind of denotes foul play rather than actual crushing melancholy.
And they actually think that the person who carried out said alleged murder
might have been Richard III.
Yeah.
Might have. Again, history is written by the winners, and there was a lot of smear campaign also, so it's hard to know what's real and what's the hype.
Which I will go into in our next episode.
I mean, Dickie III, Electric Boogaloo, was totally a great scapegoat.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was pretty much, you know, pin the tail on the asshole for that guy. Pretty much the whole fucking cast of Shakespeare's Richard III ended up spending some kind of quality time in, around, under, on the chopping block at the tower, which we will get a little bit more into in your segment of this. But yeah, that was a big, that was a popular area for these guys. And then there was good old Henry VIII, I am, and he came along and he was like, oh, Richard III, yeah, hold my beer, and proceeded to use the Tower of London as his own personal inconvenient wife storage and removal service.
Right? Is it just me, or is, like, Henry VIII England's equivalent to the southern redneck of America?
He was fucking Bluebeard, right? Like, right. When it came to his wives. Because in addition to not one, but two of his wives being imprisoned and beheaded here at the Tower of London, Henry VIII also took out a fuck ton of other people in his wake who dared to suggest that maybe he ought to slow his goddamn roll. So, yeah, this was also, you know, a very popular murder site for this particular Merry Monarch. So, the wives who met their bloody end here are probably the best known sources of inspiration for the tower being this bloody, terrible place. And again, side note, you may need to reconsider your life choices, Hank number 8, when British schoolchildren have to make up a cute little sing-song rhyme about your spouses to remember how they all fared.
Oh, please tell me you have it. Please.
I do. Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, there'll be more singing. It's pretty much like Stephen Sondheim's Rejects here. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, seriously, I guess that's what you get when you pretty much, I don't know, fucking invent the Church of England because you're tired of the old ball and chain and you want that hot new hookup, but the Catholic Church is all, what part of until death do us part did you not understand? Which is basically how Henry VIII was able to divorce his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, she got lucky, and get with her lady-in-waiting, Anne Boleyn, while also shtupping Anne Boleyn's sister, Mary, as his other side chick.
You know what gets me about that is he was so close with Catherine of Aragon forever, for the rest of his life. I mean, he consulted her all the way through.
But, you know, she just, like, got old, so, and, like, you know, didn't give him so many sons, so she had to go. But at least he liked her enough that he didn't just, like, off with her head. He figured out a whole new religious system so that he could get a divorce.
Right?
I mean, that's devotion, ladies, isn't it? Mm-hmm. At least Henry VIII style it is. So, Anne Boleyn, you know, Anne, girl, you should know that once a cheater, he's always going to be a cheater.
Man, she got a bum deal, though.
Really? Yeah? Because old Hanky Panky, I know you're all going to be real surprised here, got tired of Anne, who suddenly wasn't all that submissive anymore once he put a ring on it. And she committed the cardinal sin of spectacularly failing to give him a male heir, which is, again, the only thing you ever want as a king, right? Because patriarchy. Okay, on that note, can I just say, Anne Boleyn did happen to plop out a stupid, cootie-filled girl baby who, spoiler alert, went on to become motherfucking Queen Elizabeth, first of her goddamn name, Mother of Dragons, Khaleesi of the goddamn British Isles, played by Kate Galadriel Blanchett in not one but two big fancy movies. So, I mean, come on. Anne did fine by you, Hank. Why you gotta get all killy?
Look at this dog. He's being a fucking adorable over here.
I believe the dog is like, I'm so distressed by all the beheadings, I just have to lie on my side and make snorty noises.
Yep, Mr. Snort Snort. Adorable.
Yes. So Anne had to go. Couldn't just divorce her. Nope, have to go, Anne. So we're gonna trump up some false charges of adultery, incest with her brother.
Right.
And witchcraft, always a popular,
dodge
to get inconvenient women to shut the fuck up. And Shazam, imprisonment, and then beheading, at the Tower of London on May 19th, 1536.
What really gets me about that is, out of all of the things he could have charged her with, he went with incest and witchcraft.
Yeah.
Adultery alone would have been enough, but because she was around so few people, and the one that she had the closest relationship to, who was a male, was her brother, that's the one that stuck.
Yeah, I can't say that any of this is going to make Hank VIII look particularly good, you guys. Sorry about that.
Does anything? I just compared him to a southern redneck.
Yeah, he's pretty much a dill hole. He's a dill hole in, like, a doublet. Dill hole in a doublet. The Henry VIII story.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's going to be our next book. So, there are plenty of stories today about the ghost of Anne Boleyn traipsing about the grounds of the castle for several hundred years, right? And these spooky stories kind of have persisted because everyone loves a ghost story. And they became so popular that in 1934, a couple of wacky British songsters, Mr. R.P. Weston and Bert Lee, wrote a cute little ditty about this ghost, cheekily entitled "With Her Head Tucked Underneath Her Arm."
Oh, sweet Jesus. Yeah. And it can't even get, like, any respect in death.
No. And this was actually popularized a number of different people, from the Kingston Trio to Rudy Valley recorded this thing.
So, our current line of monarch, they are descended from her, correct? Because they are the Tudor line.
Yeah. I mean, ish, sort of. Because then they had to get the Hanovers. Look, everybody's sort of cousins of everybody.
That's true. So, the royals are all kind of related.
No, I mean, I think the current ones are actually kind of Germans in many ways. I don't know. It's confusing.
Well, because of...
I mean, they're more inbred than, like, a West Virginia Hill clan. So, they just got money. That's
another
the difference.
Another story we'll have to do sometime.
I'm scared of West Virginia. No.
Yeah, no. That Hill Clan, that's something.
See, I keep alienating states, like, oh, fuck West Virginia. Jesus Christ, Alabama. I'm gonna get Texas a little later in this story.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah,
good.
I'm all about building the base here.
Let's
the base.
Cover them all.
Would you like to hear a little bit of "With Her Head Tucked Underneath Her Arm"?
Oh, you know I would.
I'm not gonna, like, sing this, because I don't want to do that to y'all. So I'll just recite a couple verses of this. "In the Tower of London, large as life, the ghost of Anne Boleyn walks, they declare. Poor Anne Boleyn was once King Henry's wife, until he made the headsman bob her hair. Ah, yes, he did her wrong long years ago, and she comes up at night to tell him so. With her head tucked underneath her arm, she walks the bloody tower. With her head tucked underneath her arm at the midnight hour. She comes to haunt King Henry. She means giving him what for. Gadzooks, she's gonna tell him off. She's feeling very sore. And just in case the headsman wants to give her an encore, she's got her head tucked underneath her arm. With her head tucked underneath her arm, she walks the bloody tower. With her head tucked underneath her arm at the midnight hour." And it just gets goofier from there.
Oh, sweet Jesus. That's almost as good as the, what was it, the...
Oh, the Ogopogo song?
Yes,
oh, yeah.
The Ogopogo
song.
I'm
all about bringing you just, you know, Terpsichorean ditty delights from the 1930s.
I'm in.
I'm here for you for that.
Thank you. Thank you for being there for me. So few people are with 1930s.
Oh yeah,
songs.
I'll be releasing my 1930s novelty song mixtape. I'll be dropping it anytime now.
Excellent. I will sing back up and I will snap in rhythm for you.
Excellent. Awesome. I might even try scatting a little bit. Yeah, it's going to be great. So, not content to behead just one wife, old Henry continued his pattern of being a misogynist, patriarchal twat waffle, and also did in his fifth wife, Catherine Howard, for having the temerity to, theoretically anyway, step out on him, a well-known serial adulterer himself, and now an aged and leg-ulcerous creepy old man with a handsome younger courtier.
How did he get that ulcer in his leg?
So, a lot of people are like, it was syphilis, but many historians are like, nah, probably not. And I did look into this, and I can't remember the name of the actual illness, but they think there was some kind of genetic disorder that he had that also explains why so many of his kids died in infancy, but they're not really sure.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we didn't have things like antibiotics, so who knows what might have done him in. He certainly, he had gained a lot of weight, so maybe it's gout. There's a lot of options for why.
Oh, great. Lots of options.
So after Henry's death, the imprisonments and the beheadings didn't exactly slow down at the Tower. Poor Lady Jane Grey and her husband, the unfortunately named Guilford Dudley, were both imprisoned and executed there as part of the scramble for the throne which ensued after Henry's teenage son died and left no direct heir to the monarchy. Even the future queen to rule them all, Elizabeth I, did a few months on house arrest at the Tower while the business of inheritance was sorted out. Now, a side note about exactly what kind of prison the Tower actually was. So we hear the word dungeon, and of course we immediately imagine like a dark, underground kind of stone hole with portcullises and oubliettes and chains and instruments of torture.
Not anymore. Now I hear the word dungeon and I see some French guy going, "Donjon!" Oh, no.
But like when you think of prisons, especially like old-timey medieval and early modern prisons, you kind of picture that kind of classic, like, dungeon from Dungeons and Dragons.
Beat me, whips and chains, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, by and large,
oh,
this
wait.
Was...
That's a different kind of dungeon.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's the fun kind. But, okay, so the Tower, again, not being built as a prison, but being built as a royal residence, by and large, was more like that kind of country club-style prison for political hot potatoes, rather than like a Supermax for royalty version of HBO's Oz, okay?
I'm with you.
Being deprived of liberty is never great. Having the potentiality for beheading, hanging over you like an axe, also not great. But by and large, they were living a fairly comfortable existence. I mean, Sir Walter Raleigh, who was imprisoned in the Bloody Tower for 13 years, lived in relative comfort and was allowed to have his wife and two kids move in with him. He could bring his own furniture, he had good food, he even grew tobacco out on the lawn there, and he made a great use of his time while imprisoned by writing the history of the world. So, not the worst place to be cooped up. A far cry from being on, like, a chain gang or having to bang out license plates for pennies a day.
I'm just kind of odd that his wife and kids moved in there with him. I mean, it must have been a pretty nice setup. Can you imagine that conversation? "Hey, baby, I really miss you. I know you miss me, too. Why don't you move into my donjon with me?"
Well, again, that's because a donjon wasn't a dungeon at that time. Or at least in this particular setting. So other non-royal notable prisons at the Tower included Guy Fawkes, who was tortured and interrogated there regarding his role in the gunpowder plot to blow up Parliament. Basically, just like watch V for Vendetta if you're all, "Who?" Because I mean, we don't have time to go into all of that because this is not an actual British history, podcast, but, you know, check that out.
As if you couldn't tell.
Yeah. And you probably don't need me to, you know, you don't want me to be your, you know, your history master here, because I'm going to fuck this all up for you. But, you know, Fawkes was also, for his extremely treasonous doings, sentenced to be hanged and drawn and quartered, like our pal William Wallace that I talked about earlier. But the joke's on you, Parliament, because being a rebel, old Guy Fawkes actually deprived them of the joy of getting to draw and quarter him by leaping to his less painful broken neck death from the scaffolding as he was being led up there.
Well so, done, Guy
yeah,
Fawkes.
Guy
way
Fawkes,
to be a rebel all the way through.
Yeah, got the last laugh. William Penn, the founder of the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, also did a few months in the Tower for being a dirty Quaker pamphleteer. Samuel Pepys, the very famous diarist, was also imprisoned there for 6 weeks in 1679 for, they trumped it up as misadministration, but my husband Wilhelm, who is a enormous Pepys fan, like Sammy Pepys is his boy, wants to make sure that I tell you that he was framed, and he was basically the patsy and the fall guy for his employer, the Earl of Sandwich, because I'm sure you really care.
I'm riveted.
Riveted, but I'm just, you know, I'm trying to keep domestic harmony in my own house so that Will doesn't have me imprisoned in the Tower of London and beheaded for speaking ill of the peeps.
Your harmony is kept.
Yes. Hey, even my own ancestor, my actual ancestor, Sir Thomas Urquhart, was imprisoned there for a few years in the 1650s.
Well, I'll be damned.
Yeah. Hilarious side note, Sir Thomas was reported to have died of laughter upon receiving news of the restoration of King Charles II to the throne after the overthrow of Oliver Cromwell. So, apparently, I come by being a braying ass and wiseacre, quite honestly. Yep, smartassery, totally genetic.
You know what? I could see that as being the way you die.
Yeah.
I could. As somebody, yeah, Trump has been restored into power, and you would just die laughing.
Well, I think, actually, in this case, Sir Thomas kind of wanted Charles to get back because he was a royalist. I don't know. It's all very confusing. Everyone's always overthrowing everyone else. Everyone's kind of a dick. I don't really know who to root for throughout much of history in general. It turns out humans are really bad at governing themselves, and we haven't, I think, gotten a lot better at it as time goes on.
I think you could have stopped at humans are really bad, and it'd still be a true sentence.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm with you on that one. So, you know, over time, the tower was less and less used as a residence and certainly as a prison. And at this point in time, it's mainly a tourist attraction and a place to store the crown jewels. Although, during the 20th century, there were still prisoners at the tower. They were mainly military in nature, with 11 spies being tried and executed by firing squad at the tower during World War II. And then, I'm sorry, during World War I, and then during World War II, Rudolf Hess, Adolf Hitler's right-hand asshole, was kept there for a few days in 1941 during a prisoner transfer and was the last state prisoner to be held at the tower. The last person to be executed there was German spy Josef Jacobs, who was shot there on August 15th, 1941.
You know what I have to say to that?
No loss.
Fuck Nazis.
Right? And interestingly and quirkily enough, the famous 1950s and 60s hardmen English gangsters, the Cray brothers, who were very interesting people, they actually did a very short stint there at the tower in 1952, as they were among the very last military prisoners to be held at the tower. And they ended up
really?
There. Yes, because after they were conscripted in the 1950s, as all, you know, young British men were, they basically punched out a corporal for daring to try to, you know, make them join the army, and they ended up in prison for this, and later a dishonorable discharge.
That's how I go to prison.
Yeah, just punch a corporal right in the kisser. And they say the Brits are so polite. So, basically, the tower has this reputation for being a place of horrible imprisonment and torture and execution. But, honestly, and here's where I become the ruinator, as I always am. I am the spoiler, right? The truth about this place is kind of more complicated and not nearly as bloodily terrible as the popular imagination kind of suggests it to be.
Alcatraz was much worse.
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, it was really more of a country club than a supermax. And, you know, its initial purpose was really to be a royal residence, so proper prison cells were not even built on the tower grounds until 1687, when a brick soldier's prison was added onto the northwest side of the White Tower. You know, much of the tower's rep for torture was really the result of initially 16th century religious propagandists who were all mad about this whole Church of England shit, and their kind of writings about it that were then clutched tightly to the heaving bosoms of 19th century romanticists during sort of the Victorian era, who just fucking lived for sordid tales of medieval torture, right?
Because Victorians.
Right. So, though there were some very colorfully named instruments of torture, like the rack, the scavenger's daughter, which is basically, from what I can tell, a Pilates reformer machine designed by the devil himself, and manacles and thumbscrews were indeed used during the peak years that the Tower was a political prison, it was actually kind of hard to get permission to torture somebody at that time. There was this, the Privy Council, who was basically like the kind of monarchy's king's advisors. They had to approve the use of torture. And during the 100 years between 1540 and 1640, when the Tower was really at its heyday, there were only 48 sanctioned uses of torture during that time period.
Interesting.
Yeah, so a lot of that is really very much hyped up. And to just add again to this perspective, using numbers, the magic of numbers, the death toll at the Tower was not nearly as high as it kind of gets hyped to be either. So over the course of its about 1,400, or sorry, over the... over the course of its 400 years as a popular execution spot, Tower Hill only saw 112 people put to death there, and just 7 executions occurred within the castle on the Tower Green itself, including that of Lady Jane Grey. It was basically a place where you kind of executed people that you didn't really want to do that in public, because it would cause too much outcry.
Quick question about Lady Jane. Was she the one he gave the... he had a professional swordsman come in for, and with the sharpened sword instead of the axe, to behead her?
I don't know if that... I don't know about
I
that part.
I think... I don't know if it was her or Anne Boleyn. He had it for one of them. I want to say it was Lady Jane, that he had a professional swordsman come in, I think from France, and he distracted her and caused her to turn a certain way, and he beheaded her with one swipe. Because often, you know, it was multiple hacks
to kind of hack at it.
Head off.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Sir...
Nearly Headless Nick. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because, you know, we get all of our... really, all of our British history comes from Hogwarts here in America.
That's
yeah,
right.
Totes, my goats. But in terms of basically putting this... the numbers of people killed there into modern terms we can understand, they're really... being 112 people at the Tower Hill and 7 within the Tower Green itself, that makes basically 119 people killed over the course of 400 years. So really, that's about one execution every 4 years or so. I mean, again, to put this in perspective, the state of Texas, just the state of Texas, has executed 114 people, almost the same number of people put to death at the Tower, in just the last fucking decade. So yeah, a little perspective.
But, I mean, did they deserve it?
Any of them?
I'm just saying, did they deserve it?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, I would rather not mess with Texas before I would not mess with the UK at that time.
Who the fuck wants to mess with Texas? Those people are crazy.
I want to stay the hell out of Texas. And I say this as half my family lives there. Don't need to visit. Sorry, guys. You can come see me in the not crazy part where we don't kill a lot of people.
One of my best friends lives down there. I go there. I go to Texas in the summer just to see him because I love him that much. But it's crazy.
I'm just saying, all my family makes more money than I do, so y'all can fly up here.
It's more attractive
yeah.
up here.
Yeah.
Better
Seriously.
Weather.
Oh, God, we don't have, like, giant bugs, and you won't broil to death, and no tornadoes. So, seriously.
However, we also don't have crawfish boils, so.
Well, you can still get crawdads up here. It's possible.
Yeah, there's and a our, lake, but
they
it's
do,
not the same.
They do have superlative barbecue compared to us, but...
yeah. I totally agree with that.
But still. So, Bloody Tower, that bloody, kinda, but kinda not, also. I mean, there are just so many legends and other interesting uses for the tower that I didn't go into in this half of our two-parter. So you can look forward to the horrors of medieval and early modern zookeeping, and all about ravens, ravens, ravens next episode for me, because I like birds. I will be talking about the Raven Master and the interesting legends and realities around the at least 6, but up to 8 ravens that need to be in residence at the tower at all times. Again, I love birds. I particularly love corvids. So I am all fucking in on next episode. I'm very excited about it. Can't wait to talk about it. So yeah. And with that basic little quickie history of the Tower of London in general as a place to store and dispose of your political enemies, I'm going to turn things over to my esteemed colleague, Professor Regina King, who can give you some truly horrible specifics about one particular set of famous royal prisoners, the little princes in the tower.
That's right, because I am here to bring the terrible. I am the darker side of the show, as we have already discovered. And if you haven't picked up what we have been putting down, the Tower of London is actually going to be a two-part episode. This is part one.
Yeah, this is the basics and child murder half of the podcast.
Yes.
The second half will involve car park mausoleums and birds, birds, birds!
So, I'm doing the Princess in the Tower.
Because everybody likes a little bit of royal child murder, right?
God, these poor kids. So, the two stories that I am presenting in this, you know, two-part Tower of Terror...
100 Floors of Fright!
There you go. Tower of London. Yeah, that's it. Tower of London episode. Are pretty closely intertwined. They're the stories of King Richard III and the Princes of the Tower. Or the two princes in the tower. But for sanity's sake, I'm going to start us off with the princes and end us in the next episode with Richard. So I'm kind of going to gloss over a little bit with Richard. I'm going to give you the quick and the dirty. It may not be clean, but at least you know he isn't the lion from Robin Hood. P.S. to our English listeners, this is how we Americans relate to English history. Did it have to do with Robin Hood?
Not really. Did it happen at Hogwarts?
Did it happen at Hogwarts? You know.
And is Meghan Markle married to any of them?
Yes, that's what we got.
That's the sum total of what we know about British history.
Or, you know, the Revolutionary War.
Oh yeah, we don't know shit about that. And many of us genuinely believe the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery, so that's just how goddamn dumb we all are over here.
America, this is why the rest of the world hates us. Okay. So the year was 1483, and King George, who had won the very bloody War of the Roses, which we had mentioned earlier, that lasted for about 30 years, dies. George had reportedly let himself go with the excesses
were... Nothing exceeds like excess?
Yeah, let's go with that. Of being king. The king's lifestyle had, according to what's written in history after coronation, he just kind of let himself go. Which, what's written in history may or may not be true, so we're not entirely sure if that is what was ultimately his demise.
Yeah, remember, history is written by the winners, and we've lost a lot of perspectives because we didn't have quite the degree of recording or public record keeping or any of that kind of thing like we do today.
I think it's really funny that my next bullet point says history is written by the winners.
Yeah. So just, victors. You know, again, this is allegedly is the true spirit of our show. And so we're going to allegedly for all of this.
Yeah. And let's remember that even though the Yorkists won the War of the Roses over the Plantagenet rule, they did not hold the crown for long.
Plantagenet.
I can't word today.
To be fair, it's a bit of a wacky Planet Hollywood. So the Planet Hollywoods and the Yorkie bars totally just like fought, and the Planet Hollywoods totally got defeated by New York. The end.
However, we will hear more about that wackiness in our next episode. George raised the hackles of his citizens and supporters alike when he chose to marry Elizabeth Woodville. Instead of a French connection that Henry Safford, the second Duke of Buckingham?
So Lindsay Buckingham was like, no, you can't marry Stevie Nicks. And he was like, I'm gonna.
Right? Well, he... Okay,
and then Fleetwood Mac was born. The end.
And so the second Duke of Buckingham was also known as the Kingmaker and the Kingbreaker. So I just kind of want that nickname. The Kingmaker and the Kingbreaker. Like, they call him Maker Breaker for short.
It's like Master Blaster.
Yeah. Yeah, Maker Breaker. I like it.
But he's not Jaime Lannister. That's the Kingslayer.
Yes. Totally.
And that's not actual real history. Although, those books were sort of based on the War of the Roses, so kind of, but no.
Including Lancasters and Tyrells.
I'm pretty sure that somewhere in, like, Windsor Castle, that Queen Elizabeth has, like, a replica of the Iron Throne that she just kind of lounges on.
I totally would. There's a picture of her sitting on an Iron Throne. Yeah.
I just like to imagine that hers is more like a Barca Lounger lion, like... Iron Throne, where, like, there's a little lever that she can, like, put her feet up and shit, because she is real old.
I really want that to be a thing. Can somebody make that a thing?
Headcanon accepted. That's what's happening.
Accepted.
You can trust us. We're historians.
So why did the Kingmaker Breaker care about Elizabeth Woodenville so much? Well, to put it simply, Elizabeth was part of the Lancastrian line that the Yorkists had spent 30 years fighting with over the crown.
Ooh, yeah. Going back to that poison well. Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think it was a genius political move. I mean, how do you best end a war? You marry the enemy after defeating him. Makes sense, right? Yeah.
That seems very diplomatic. The two houses shall become one, and the dark crystal will be healed.
Makes perfect sense.
I'm with you.
Yeah, thank you.
They're going to make love, not war now. It's great.
Well.
Or not.
No, it's never that easy. So when George died in the spring of 1483, he left behind a handful of children, including his two eldest boys, Prince Edward V, royal heir to the throne, who was 12, and his brother, Richard of Shrewsbury, I love that, Shrewsbury, Duke of York, who was 8.
They have a very nice cathedral, Shrewsbury.
I just want to be royal for the fucking title. Can I get that name? Regina King, evil queen of Shrewsbury.
Because we're going to be royals. Royals! Yeah.
Yeah. So the little Duke of York shared a name with his uncle, Richard III. And that just hit me while I was typing up my notes. And I was typing up my notes and I was just like, that's so sad.
It's sad and it's horribly confusing. Like, seriously, royal people of England, there's a shit ton of other names besides George, Edward, Richard, John, Elizabeth. Come on, like...
Well, I love how his... Edward and Richard, and then Edward and Richard.
Yeah, this is... Okay, and numbering them doesn't help, because again, they're all out of sequence.
Because they're different lines and different families.
Right?
For fuck's sake, just number them.
Can we make, like, a law going forward that they have to have, like hurricanes, they've got to have, like, different names, so you don't get them confused? Because I am looking forward to a future that has, like, I don't know, King Lamont, you know? Like, why not?
Josiah? I mean, something.
Queen Tiffany, like, this makes me very happy.
Yeah.
So, I'm just saying, modernize, could you just a little bit?
Gunner? Something.
Oh, my God, Queen Brooklyn! Oh, my God! Yeah, no, we need this. I want this. I want this badly.
I think when we say we need this, we literally mean us. We, as in, you know, us.
I mean, how much Princess Jennifer? Like, how much do you not want that? Empress Tammy of the known world. Like, this, seriously.
I'm in. All right, so after the elder George died, there was a scramble to see who would be the protector of the realm until the little King George became of age.
Sure, makes sense.
Yep. Even though their uncle Richard III had been named protector of the realm in his stead because he was well-respected in their group, Queen Elizabeth felt that her son was old enough to take the crown at 12, and she sent for little Edward to be brought from her brother's house in the country for his coronation. Which, by the way, it seems like royals really like sending their kids off to be raised by other wealthy noble people. You see this repeatedly throughout history.
I mean, if you can do that, outsourcing that's kind of fun, you know?
You just farm your children out to other
wealthy
people.
Well, yeah, I mean, first you find somebody with, like, a working boob, and you're like, here, you take it. And then, you know, you send them out to tutors, finishing school, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
And they wonder why they kill each other. I mean, there's no time to bond there.
No.
No. Anyway, so as the little Edward was being brought to London by his maternal uncle, they met his uncle Richard on the road. They ate and drank at an inn, and then Richard promptly seized the Queen's brother, telling little Edward that he was guilty of treason.
Uh-huh.
As you do.
Let's trump some charges up, shall we? Mm-hmm.
Then Richard took charge of the little king to, feel my air quotes here, people, keep him safe.
Uh-huh. Safe from, say, inheriting the crown.
Right. He took him to the Tower of London.
What could be a safer place?
I mean, it's obviously a good place to stow a royal, we have discovered.
Yeah, historically, that's a popular place for him. Yeah.
Queen Elizabeth, not being stupid, recognized that some shady shit was going down, and she fled with the rest of her children to Westminster Abbey for sanctuary.
Sanctuary. And remember, this is not Queen Elizabeth, like, Kate Blanchett Queen Elizabeth.
No, this is Elizabeth Woodenville.
Before this, so, yeah.
Yes.
Again, everybody has the same goddamn name. Would it kill you to just improvise?
I mean, we could call her Woody.
Woody. Yeah, Queen Woody was Queen like, Woody. Oh, shit, I'm taking my kids, and we're hiding out in the church where they can't come get us.
Because they're vampires.
Because they're vampires.
That is the only answer here. Okay. After finding herself safely at Westminster, it seemed like plans for Edward's coronation were still happening. Lo and behold, Edward himself was being kept safe and sound at the Tower of London. And that's something that wasn't entirely out of the norm. I mean, it is customary for the future king to stay at least one night in the tower before his coronation.
That is totally true, yep.
So when officials came to ask Queen Elizabeth, or otherwise, a.k.a. Queen Woody,
sure,
to release her son, Richard, to them, so that he could be present at his brother's coronation, she actually agreed.
Oh, no. Is this going to be, like, abducted in plain sight?
Seriously, I'm sorry, but that was stupid. I mean, if she actually was like, sure, take my son, who is the only other male heir in the line of the last king aside from my 12-year-old. I mean, that's just dumb.
That seems safe.
Right? Good parenting. Again, farming her children out to be raised by others, clearly for a reason. So Richard was spirited away to the tower to hang out with Edward before he was named king.
I bet that'll happen.
Oh, for sure. These stories always end happy when I'm telling
sure.
them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. However, there was a game afoot, and it was a nasty game. And one nasty rumor falling off the lips of a very well-respected bishop at the pulpit ruined the prince's lives. You see, this fucking guy got up there and denounced both boys, claiming that they were products of adulterous affairs.
Bastards!
This was the day before the little king's coronation.
So Bishop Smacktalk got up and was like, are they the legitimate heirs to the throne? Who can say?
Well, and you have to remember, everyone was already pissed off about the queen and her bloodline not being what they wanted, and they were already talking smack, but she had already been the queen, and there was nothing they could do about it, because this is pre-Henry and the Church of England, so
queen
there
for
she
life,
was.
Except if you behead her.
Yes, or gotcha. All of a sudden her bloodline is no longer valid, it's that dirty bastard's
tainted
blood.
Yep.
Yeah, so the people had a field day with that. They really ran with it. And the next thing you know, within a week, it is actually written down in print as if it's history. So, of course, what happens? In a matter of minutes, the little boys went from being royalty to bastards. And the good and loyal protector of the realm, their uncle Tricky Dick, became the next king.
Convenient, that.
Oh, so convenient.
So he probably, like, just was like, okay, boys, going on your way, right?
Oh, of course, because that could never be a problem for him in the future.
Yeah, won't ever come back to bite him in the ass. Pat him in the head, give him a lollipop, send him along.
Of course, of course. Especially since, you know, the youngest shares his name and all. after Tricky Dick the Third became King Tricky Dick the Third, that left him with a little bit of a dilemma. You see, he had learned years before that you never let a former king or anyone who could claim the title live, as we had mentioned, allegedly. The last time the little boys were conclusively seen either alive or dead, they had been practicing archery on the lawn before retreating into the tower. And then, in the summer of 1483, they just disappeared.
Poof.
Poof. The rumors that swirled around the country were thick. They said that King Tricky Dick III had murdered the boys himself.
Oh, I'm sure he just sent him to summer camp, right?
Well, I find it hard to believe. I mean, if you're a king, you get somebody else to do the killing.
Yeah, you outsource that shit.
Unless you just like killing. And then if you just like killing, you probably do it on a bigger scale, and you probably...
That's what wars are for.
Yeah, you end up locked in a tower if you don't do it during a war, or you just make up a war. I mean, plenty of generals and kings have done this in the past. I really hope these little boys were treated well at the tower. I mean, I've heard that they were, and I really hope they were oblivious to the lies that were being spread by the entire nation and the church about them. Can you imagine that being the last thing that you hear and see and know, not only about your own origins, but about your mother, before you allegedly are murdered? So Richard actually never spoke about the boys again in public.
Boys? I know no boys.
Right? He didn't answer questions. He never released a formal statement. And because of that, it really just fed into the rumors, and it cemented itself in people's minds. And then he only held on to the crown for about 2 years before losing it to Henry Tudor, who began hiring historians to rewrite history, which is, you know, what we have been alluding to this entire time.
Yeah, basically a smear campaign.
Yeah, yeah. But, fun fact, did you know our favorite Benedict Cumberbatch is a distant relation to Richard III.
To Dicky III? No.
Yes, Tricky Dicky III. He is a distant relation. And to me, he is definitely King Cumberbatch in my eyes.
See, you can have other names besides Richard. King Cumberbatch, for instance.
You can. Benedict, King Benedict. I'd be fine with this. So one of these historians is who William Shakespeare based his play Richard III off of.
Which is rad. You should totally check it out. There are some really great televised and recorded versions of it. I super love the Ian McKellen version. It's kind of set in like a fascist dictatorship. It's pretty damn rad.
And not only that, but some lines that I guarantee you have heard and said yourself come directly from this play.
Oh, yes. Thus I clothe my naked villainy. My horse, my horse,
my kingdom for a horse.
Yep.
And with the great playwright's stroke of a quill, whatever the actual truth was quickly became obscured by the alleged tale that the death of the boys was the fault of their uncle. However, what actually happened to these young boys has been a mystery for ages. In 1674, construction workers repairing a flight of stairs, which really tells you how fucking old the Tower of London is, right?
Really fucking old.
Yep. Repairing a flight of stairs within the tower, found an old chest containing the skeletons of two children. King Charles II, who was the monarch at that time, made it canon that these two figures were the missing princes and had them interred in Westminster Abbey. However, do we actually know that they were the princes? No. No, we do not. And why don't we? Because they haven't done DNA testing. That's why. But before I go off about that fucking travesty, let's look at the ancient suspects of this alleged murder. There's King Richard III. He had all of the motive. All of it. He had all of the motive. He was hiding the motive in, like, giant buckets behind him. He was like, see this motive? It's all fucking mine. You can't have any. Yeah, that was him. However, like I said, I think he was responsible for the alleged murder, but he would have to be the architect and not the executioner.
So he would have called the hit, but not actually performed it.
Exactly. But then who would be his executioner? Enter Sir James Tyrell. He was a loyal knight to Tricky Dick III, who later confessed to murdering the boys. His confession should be taken with an entire bucket of salt, though, considering it was under torture that he made this confession. However, he did say one thing that lends credibility to his story more than anything else that I have heard. This lends credibility to his story. He told them that he buried the boys under the stairs within the tower. It's very convenient, though, that the original confession of the murder by the orders of King Richard III was lost to history. So we don't actually have the written confession and how much it's been rewritten by Henry Tudor. However, he wouldn't have known to say that he buried him under the stairs. So again, that little piece, that one detail, really lends credence to his confession. Seriously, though, why the fuck didn't anyone say, okay, lead me to the stair and get them the fuck out of there? I mean, it reminds me of your friend who may or may not have a body under the cement slab in their backyard. Doesn't anyone want to know?
I don't know that everyone in the world is a creepy murderino like us.
I know, but I mean, for the love of God, if two princes are buried under the stairs, get them the fuck out for just decency's sake.
Oh yeah, plus, is that sanitary? I don't know that it is.
If there's a body in your backyard, get it the fuck out for decency's sake. I mean, just saying. Your friend listens to this, doesn't she?
I don't know if she does, but I have been, like, ground-penetrating radar at her over and over again. And I'm not the only one. Like, various of her friends are like, we need to know! So maybe we'll take up a collection and, like, get some to see if we can find the body underneath the concrete slab in the back.
Hey, if anyone in Seattle wants to lend their ground-penetrating radar and their skills, we can do... I don't know.
It'd be like something. Al Capone's vault in which we find nothing, literally nothing. We can totally go full Geraldo on this shit.
I don't know. We might find a body.
Maybe.
Maybe it's Jimmy Hoffa. We don't know.
We might find D.B. Cooper's lost millions. That would be amazing.
That would be amazing. Henry Tudor, though, is also on the suspect list, but it's highly unlikely. Even though he was known for executing possible rivals to the throne, it's highly unlikely. So, the takeaway from the story, ultimately, is people are the fucking worst and will do anything for power.
Well, yeah, I think that's pretty well established.
Yeah. That is my takeaway. Oh, and that the fucking royal family gives less of a shit about identifying their family members than I do. I mean, they could identify the possible Romanov family, but no. Are they going to? No.
They're not
going to
go on 23andMe.
Mm-mm. No. Look, your majesties, we're not trying to clone you with the Romanovs or anything. We're just asking that you please, you know, spit in a cup, let us find out if they're who they are. And maybe give permission to test the bodies that were found under the staircase against maybe Benedict Cumberbatch. I bet he'd be cool about it.
Oh, I figured it out. I know what we gotta do. I totally have a plan for us. Okay, here's the thing. We, like, come out with our best British accents, love, and we go and become chambermaids or, like, housemaids, right, at the Royal Palace that, like, are tasked with the cleaning up and stuff.
I will never pass that background check.
Yeah, I probably won't either. But this is, you know, I'm on a roll here. Don't stop me.
Okay.
So here's my new plan. So we do that, right? We go full upstairs, downstairs. We just binge-watch Downton Abbey till we know what the fuck to do, right? We go, Mom, I need a job. And so we get jobs as chambermaids. And then we just follow the queen around. We just follow her around. And as soon as she, like, puts down her Pimm's cup, right, we grab it. And then we like, wrap it up and we take it back with us and we swab it for DNA.
It would actually have to be her husband.
Or Prince Philip.
I'm good with this.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Okay.
Okay. So when you don't hear from us, that's because we have moved to England, changed our names, are establishing an identity, which is going to take a few years to pass that background check. But, you know, we're establishing that identity.
We're Meghan Markle's distant cousins.
Yeah, but that's never going to fly. Okay. Damn.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is my story about the princess in the tower.
Excellent. And we get to find the exciting sequel to find out what became of their worst uncle ever, Tricky Dick.
Oh, yes.
In the next episode.
Yes. So, you have anything good happen to you this week?
Did I have anything good happen to me this week? Probably my brain is like, I don't know. Oh, I thwarted my house catching on fire.
Oh, that is good.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I mean, we don't want the bordella to burn.
Yeah, no, it was dryer-related fire smell situation. It actually turned out to be like a chunk of lint on a heating element. No fire, no death, not even having to get it repaired. We're all good. We're all fine here now. We're all fine.
You know, that and speaking happens of, frequently.
That's very depressing. We're all fine here. We're all fine. Thinking of Chewbacca and how actor Peter Mayhew has passed away.
Yeah, that's sad. That's not good.
That made me sad. Yeah. So
I'm going to bring us.
I have that to say to you, Chewbacca.
I will miss you, Peter. I am going to bring us full circle with something good, though. I got to talk to actually two old friends of mine recently. One of them has started texting me from Louisiana, who I miss to death. She was my best girlfriend down in Louisiana, and I miss her so much. And it was just so nice and refreshing having that contact more again. And it's just because I'm a terrible communicator. I mean, bottom line is I'm a shit communicator. You communicate with me, you get thumbs up in a Facebook message like 9 times out of 10.
Oh, so. I'm the ADHD ghost. So I have dear people that I love that I apparently can't be arsed to like text. I feel
same. Same. So it's been really cool just having that connection again. And then I talked to one of my dearest friends who's back in Maryland, yesterday, just on the phone. And it's been forever since I talked to her on the phone. So, you know, that's my good thing. Just reconnecting with dear friends. If you haven't reached out to somebody that you loved in a while, do so. Yeah. They're there.
Don't be the ADHD ghost.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a good thing on the horizon.
Ooh.
The Seattle International Film Festival, is the largest film festival in the United States based on audience attendance. It's like...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's 3.5 weeks of, like, sitting in the dark, getting, like, you know, pasty-faced and glowy-eyed, and just staring at so many fascinating movies from all around the world. And, you know, not to get all hashtag me too about all of this shit, but... In the statistics about the numbers of films that are being shown, 46% of the films in the Seattle International Film Festival were directed by women.
Nice.
So fuck you, Hollywood, for being like, we just couldn't find any girls that knew how to operate a camera. No, you can, you just won't.
Another good thing is I'm going to be going all the way down to Mexico, to the Mexican Riviera, and snorkeling my little ass off with friend of the show, Lacey Nishtum, local performer, and Mr. Meow.
Nice. Yeah, so you're going to actual Mexico. I'm going to probably see a movie.
Made
by Mexicans in Mexico.
Nice.
Yeah.
My people.
This is my vacation. This is the vacation, the international vacation I can afford. I can go see a bunch of movies. No, I see about 40 or so movies over the course of about 3.5 weeks. So.
Damn, that's a lot of movies.
Yeah, that's my job right now. My job is to see as much movies, to cram as much movie into my eye holes as I possibly can.
I love it.
And I will definitely be giving people my, like, hey, you should totally see XYZ as our episodes progress.
Nice. So, on that note, take care of each other and...
Don't lock children in a tower and later kill them.
Thanks for listening, folks. Please remember to hit like, subscribe, and review. If you would like to send us an email, whether it is a picture of a wizard van or not, then you can do so at disturbinginterest@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook at The Disturbing Interest Podcast, on Twitter at podcast_DI, or on Instagram at DI Podcast. You can also follow Neko at Neko the Podcat. Find us on our website, disturbinginterest.com, or you can send us creepy things and pictures of artwork, including wizard bands, at P.O. Box 70515, Seattle, Washington, 98127. Stay disturbed, friends. We'll talk at you soon.